Welcome to another podcast right here on the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. I'm your host, JP John Paz. With me, of course, the returning guest here, the former WWE World Heavyweight Champion, the former head writer of the WWF and WCW, Mr. Vince Russo. Vince, what's going on? How you doing today?
What is going on, John? How you doing today, my friend?
Doing good. What's going on in your world? Anything exciting? Anything fun?
Nah, just same old man, just the grind, bro, just like you, man, just doing the shows and just keep on keeping on, man, that's it.
So the last time we talked about Survivor Series 1997, which was the Montreal Screwjob. Bret Hart's gone, but that doesn't mean that they're not going to tease that he's still there. I don't know if you were a part of this or not. They pretend that Bret's going to be there on Raw. They have the midget come out. They beat up the midget. What do you remember about that? Were you like, what's your role here? Were you writing that? I mean, who's in charge of it now, of the creative?
No, I'm still not 100%.
So here, teasing that Bret's coming out. I mean, really kind of poking fun. I know it goes with Shawn Michaels and the character in DX, but what did you think of that?
I mean, it was entertaining, and that's, you just hit the nail on the head. It went with the character. I mean, you could not have done that with anybody. But again, like I always say, man, if this were real, Shawn Michaels would do something like that. So I have absolutely no problem with that.
Then they actually, on the December 1st Raw, like leading into this, Rick Rude, who left and showed up on Nitro live and Raw because it was taped on the same night. He was not happy with the Bret Hart stuff, not happy about the screw job. He was on a handshake deal. He said, screw this, I'm out of here. How was working with Rick Rude, and did you like Rick Rude?
I didn't get to work with him that much. I wish I would have. I thought he was great. I mean, I was always a huge Rick Rude mark, and one day he was there, and the next day he was gone.
If Rick Rude didn't leave the WWF for WCW, would you have kept him in D-Generation X? Would he have helped out X-Pac and the Outlaws, etc.?
Think about this. Could you imagine, because he had never, ever done it throughout his entire career, could you imagine if you would have spun him out of that as a babyface? That would have really, really, really been interesting.
Jim the Anvil Neidhart comes out, and you think he's going to be basically the replacement for Rick Rude, and you think, oh, wow, I guess Neidhart is okay with Bret getting screwed, and he does this angle. How do they talk Neidhart into doing that? Because they pretend he's going to be with DX, and then they give him the low blow, and they beat him up, and they send him off packing to WCW.
I worked in such a different era because it was all about business and money. You want me to do what? Okay, how much are you going to pay me? I mean, that's really what it came down to, bro. I mean, Owen was still a part of the company after the Montreal screw job. That's what it really came down to, bro. It was wrestling. It wasn't life or death. I mean, bro, come on. At the end of the day, Bret Hart gets screwed over in a wrestling match. Okay. When you really think about it, bro, it's not a matter of life or death. And especially when you hear the backstory of everything leading up to that and why it happened. So when you're talking about a guy like Neidhart that's got a family he's got to fend for, bro, the guy needs money coming in, and it's not like he wasn't going to have the value of a Rick Rude jumping over to WCW. So at the end of the day, bro, the dude made the best decision for him and his family, and I think that's what any father and husband would have done.
Pretty shocking, and it almost goes to say, like, wow, like, is Vince in the wrong? I mean, Neidhart's still there. Owen's still there. Like, it's just one of those things where you kind of raise your eyebrow because some of the Hart Foundation is still in the WWF, even though Bret's gone.
Right, right, exactly. But like I said, bro, it's business.
That and him making fun of Bret screwed Bret. That was like his slowly becoming Mr. McMahon, who we all know and love, yeah.
Absolutely, man. And everybody wanted to sweep it under the rug. Bruce, Patterson, all of them, bro, wanted to, like, it never happened. in the meeting. And that's when I said, are you freaking crazy? This is a once in a lifetime opportunity. And when he went there with JR and cut the Brett screwed Brett, bro, that was organically the birth of Mr. McMahon. That's how it organically happened. And from there, we just kind of went with it.
Imagine if they swept it under the rug. Oh, my God. What about the attitude era?
Holy I know. Crap. Exactly, bro. I mean, that's why I was sitting there and I let everybody talk. And I'm like, this is a once in a lifetime. Vince McMahon's walking around with a black eye. Are you nuts? And that's when Vince went to the studio and cut the Brett screwed Brett.
Did Vince think he was in the right when he said that?
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
So that's not really a character, so to speak. I mean, he's partly a character, but he's like kind of serious, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yep.
Why did Vince McMahon stop doing commentary?
I don't think he could have done commentary when he was an on-air character, bro. He couldn't have done both. And his value was as the Mr. McMahon character. I mean, nobody could replace that. He was the number one heel. You can get people to announce, but that role was much, much more important than him announcing.
You can't waste the number one heel on commentary,
no,
right?
Hell no, no, no.
What did you think about him as a commentator?
Oh, he was great, man. He was great getting the story over, getting the characters over. He was great, man. He was absolutely great on commentary.
Now, very interesting thing to me, and I know people have brought this up to me. I've been asked this question to ask you to throw this on your plate here. So Owen Hart is still there. Why are they keeping Owen around if Owen doesn't want to be there?
Owen never said he did not want to be there, bro.
Was there ever any thought of like, hey, Owen could go to WCW? Or, nah, this guy's under contract. He's going to be here.
That was never the concern. And, bro, the bottom line is this had nothing to do with Owen. And everybody loved Owen. And, bro, I got to be honest. I think at least a certain part of Owen understood why things went down the way they did. Did the Hart family members saying maybe Vince wasn't wrong? Bro, Vince wasn't wrong. He wasn't wrong. And at the end of the day, if you really thought about it and you knew all the facts, you would know Vince was just protecting his company.
The Hart's going one way and Brett kind of going his way. There was definitely like a split between some of the family members that kind of wanted to side with Vince and some wanted to side with Brett.
I'm sure Brett is not happy with his brother-in-law and his brother on the show. I don't think I would be happy. So, you know, initially, bro, that's going to be the knee-jerk reaction. But after time, you know, like I said, bro, you just realize these guys got bills to pay, man. And they're not a part of this. They're not involved in this, bro. They've got to make their money.
So the actual pay-per-view itself was on December 7th, 1997. WWF Degeneration in Your House, Springfield, Massachusetts, at the Springfield Civic Center. The attendance, 6,358. The tagline, attitude is everything, kind of signifying the attitude era is a miss. Only 144,000 buys, so definitely down from Survivor Series. Kind of, I don't know, kind of shows like people that interested in Michaels.
I thought you were going to go another way, John. I don't know if it's people not that interested in Michaels or people pissed off about what happened to Bret Hart.
True.
I think it would definitely be that before it being people not interested in Shawn. But keep in mind too, bro, there were also a lot of people that really didn't know the circumstances and blame Shawn. You see what I'm saying? So now this is really, we're going to show support to Bret and non-support Sean. So right. Like, yeah, man, it doesn't surprise me at all that number's down coming off of that.
So the DX name, the D-Generation X pay-per-view name, obviously Generation X, Bret Hart called them Degenerate. So it's D-Generation X. It's a good name. Makes sense. Perfect. But was that name created for the faction or was that name created by Creative Services for the pay-per-view?
I 1,000% took that from Creative Services. They created that for a poster long before this pay-per-view.
Wow.
And I saw that and I'm like, ah, bro, this is a great name for the group.
I love that Brett calls them degenerates too. You know what I mean? It goes in perfectly. And this was before they were Degeneration X. So it everything kind of tied in perfectly with that name.
Yep.
Did you like naming the pay-per-view DX? Is that okay for you? Or should it have been something else? Like, should the faction really be the name of pay-per-view?
That's decided like 3 months beforehand, bro. I mean, I don't think people understand that. And that was always such an issue because Creative Services had to get on with the campaign and the printing of the posters and all that. And it was always a 3 months notice. And bro, in 3 months, so much could happen. And that's why a lot of times, bro, it was very vague of what exactly we could give them, bro, because they were working really, really far out.
So the pay-per-view, we're going to start it off with your favorite thing of all time, arguably. It's going to be the inaugural WWF Light Heavyweight Championship match, which was obviously you guys copying off the WCW Cruiserweight division and the success of having the lighter weight guys and having those great matches. And somebody, you guys, saw that success with like, oh, let's just copy it, but with lesser talent.
I hated that, bro. I hated the whole thing. Bro, first of all, like a good majority of the light heavyweights at WCW, bro, were luchadors. And that's a show. That's a spectacle and the costumes and the moves. Like, that's not like just two guys that weigh 150 pounds. There was so much more, the culture that went with the luchadors. That's what made it really, really special. So, you know, here we are, bro, trying to do it with, you know, Scotty Too Hotty and Brian Christopher. And I mean, you know, bro, they were great workers and everything else like that. But to me, it was never the spectacle of the luchador matches.
So Taka Michinoku defeats Brian Christopher for the inaugural WWF Light Heavyweight Championship. It goes 12 minutes. He wins with the Michinoku driver. Why Taka Michinoku, and what were you guys trying to accomplish here with giving him the belt?
Bro, I'll be honest with you. Again, that's off my pay scale. I guarantee you, bro, it was part of the negotiation that we put the belt on Taka. Not that he didn't deserve the belt. He was, bro, Taka was doing a lot of stuff way before anybody else was.
Brian Christopher, I know you probably like him.
I'm a fan of Brian Lawler. Brian Lawler was incredible, bro. And, you know, thank God he was probably the only character in that division. He got it. Great heel. Looked great. Brian Christopher, I don't think he's recognized for what a great character he was and what a great entertainer. He's never in the conversation. Jerry Lawler was his dad, man. This was in his blood. He got it, man. He got an education, and he was very, very entertaining. Brian Christopher was phenomenal, bro.
What did you think about him, like, backstage? Was he, like, a malcontent at all? Was he crazy? Like, because, you know, you always hear stories of when he was younger, like, oh, he's a party animal. And
not at work. It was yes, sir, no, sir. Never, never, never had an issue with the guy, ever.
Did his dad, like, have a good relationship?
It was kind of hidden, bro, but I think what it was, like, they were at work. And Jerry is really a professional, and I'm sure a lot of that rubbed off on Brian. Like, you would have never in a million years known they were father and son, by the way they carried each other, like, behind the scenes. I really just think that had to do with them separating the business from the person.
I always thought it was funny. Like, they almost didn't say he was a son. You know what I mean? Like, he's Brian Christopher. He's not Brian Law. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they didn't always bring him up as Jerry's kid.
Yeah. And that was the running theme, bro. JR was saying, that's your kid. And he was ignoring it.
Any reason? Like, did he not want to be Lawler? Like, Brian Lawler? Or?
I honestly don't know what was the reasoning behind it. I would think, bro, it was a rib because probably early on they were trying to kayfabe that Brian Christopher was Jerry Lawler's son. I'm sure they were trying to kayfabe that to some extent, especially at USWA. So I think by the time it got to WWE, it really turned into more of a rib.
Shame what happened, because he could still be wrestling right now. So the next matchup, Los Boricuas, Miguel Perez, Jose Castillo, and Jose Estrada, all juniors, by the way, with Savio Vega, defeated the Disciples of Apocalypse, DOA, Chains, 8-Ball, and Skull in 8 minutes in a six-man tag match here. Nothing great, nothing to write home about, but continuing on with Boricuas and DOA. I know that's not exactly up your alley, right?
These groups were created before me, so like I inherited them. I'll never forget, bro, at the beginning, the Los Boricuas, they look like ice cream men to me, bro. They don't look like thugs. And that changed over time. But, bro, I never got the concept. And again, bro, back then when it's Bruce and Pat, bro, they're all into the good workers. And those guys were all great workers. And I'm sure, bro, that stemmed from a deal with AAA or whatever it was. You give us this guy, these guys, we'll give you our guys. That used to happen all the time. But like I said, bro, good workers. On the other side of the coin, bro, we had so many guys that were over that some guys just had to be in the mid-card. Everybody couldn't have been on top. I would have loved to do something with Ronnie and Donnie. The fact that they were twins, they never really were against each other. I mean, there's a lot that could have been done. But those guys were great. Chains, Brian.
Primetime Brian Lee.
Bro, he used to get himself in a lot of trouble office-wise and stuff like that. He was a little bit of a loose cannon. Great guy. Very creative. Used to give the boys a lot of their ideas. I know he was very, very influential on Brian James, Road Dogg, helping him a lot with that character. He was always in a lot of trouble with the office for whatever reasons, but this is just a mid-card match at this point.
Next up, Butterbean defeats Mark Mero in a tough man match by disqualification in 10 minutes and 20 seconds. Really interesting here with Mero being the heel and having his Golden Gloves background. And I've talked to Butterbean about this. He said Mark Mero, legit. It's like he's a good fighter. He would do pretty good if they actually had the match. Probably wouldn't beat Butterbean. I don't know how he would knock him out or anything like that. But he said he's actually could do it, and it's actually fun. But this was much more of a staged match. Butterbean has experienced some of this a little bit in like Japan and stuff before, where he's doing work matches. But here, I don't know if this is true or not or whatever. But there's a spot where he gets DQ'd and he uses the stool. Mero picked up the wrong stool.
But you see, bro, that's the backstory that a lot of people don't know. I don't care what anybody says. You go back and you watch that Attitude Era and you watch the stuff with Marvelous Mark Mero and Rena. Mark was great.
Yes.
Absolutely great. The character, the work, the heat, such an underrated talent. No doubt about it in my mind.
Yep, definitely. So the fourth matchup, the New Age Outlaws, Road Dogg, Jesse James, and the Badass Billy Gunn, who are the WWF Tag Team Champions, defeat the Legion of Doom, Hawk, and Animal by DQ in 10 minutes and 30 seconds. What happens here is Henry Godwin, who they were feuding with LOD at this point, comes and he goes to hit Animal at the slop bucket. Hawk then gets the slop bucket, hits Billy Gunn, causes the DQ because the ref didn't see Henry Godwin. He saw LOD. So a way for the LOD and New Age Outlaws kind of continue their feud, but also the Godwins mixed in, but also keep the belts on the Outlaws as well, as they end up beating LOD once again.
Yeah. Bro, I got to tell you something, man, and this may seem odd, but this is the truth. I'll never forget, bro, going to Vince's house 1 week, and he's like, we've got the guys here. And they're younger and they're better. And I said, who are you talking about, Vince? And that's when he said to me about putting Billy and Road Dogg together. It was 100% Vince's idea. Now, you got to understand, bro, I'm looking at this and I'm like, bro, you got the roadie and you got rockabilly. Like, no way. But Vince saw something there. And I did not see it. I did not see the two of these guys together. But Vince was really behind it. And he was 1,000% dead on with those guys, bro. Bro, I got to tell you, since Vince was behind this, I never saw Vince push any talents. I'm talking about Austin. I'm talking about Rock. You can go on down the line more than he did the New Age Outlaws. He took such an interest in the New Age Outlaws more than any other talent I'd ever seen. So if you go back and look, there's a meteoric rise. And that meteoric rise is Vince McMahon is 100% behind these two guys.
And they beat LOD for the titles. I mean, they hitting them over the head with stuff. They're putting them through tables. I mean, LOD is the greatest tag team of all time. And New Age Outlaws was like using and abusing them. So it was like, holy shit, somebody likes these guys. And obviously it's Vince.
1,000%. Vince has a thing about asses. So he came up with the badass Billy Gunn and thought that was great.
Great name too. New Age Outlaws. I like that name. And I actually heard a promo from like USWA from Road Dogg from years ago. The first time he said New Age Outlaw, I was like, wow, that's interesting. Like he had it in his head.
Oh, yeah, bro. He came up with all that stuff. That was all Road Dogg, the promos and what he said. That was all Brian James, bro. I did not put one word in that dude's mouth.
Next matchup, Triple H with China defeats Sergeant Slaughter in a boot camp match, 17 minutes, 30 seconds. The finish comes when China gives Slaughter the low blow. Triple H turns him around, gives him the pedigree, gets the win. So not a decisive win here in this crazy boot camp match, which Slaughter, of course, is very, very famous for, but a good win for Triple H nonetheless against the legendary former WWF World Champion, Sergeant Slaughter.
I can't believe, bro, 17 minutes?
Yeah, for Slaughter, yeah.
Oh, my God. I'm like, what? I'm sitting here and I'm saying to myself, what the heck did they do in 17 minutes, bro?
A lot of weapons, a lot of all over the place, a lot of use of China. They're cheating, but it was almost like Triple H was like, I don't know if I could beat this guy, but you know what I mean? But he's an old man.
Yeah. But 17 minutes, bro. That blows my mind, man.
You like Slaughter in 1997 getting a big match?
We're probably a little light on the roster. And it definitely is a gimmick match. It definitely is a nostalgia match. But I got to tell you, bro, Slaughter did a really good job. And Hunter cut some really, really, really good promos. So I think at the end of the day, bro, people were interested in seeing that. But yeah, obviously, bro, it's not a main event match or anything like that. And probably just really came out of needing an opponent for Hunter.
If you think about like Slaughter in the boot camp matches, him versus Iron Sheik, the bloody matches they had in MSG, like they were awesome. So I know what they were trying to go for, like give a piece of that. And like, and I know they weren't technically boot camp matches, but they really were Hogan versus Slaughter and those awesome matches that they had. They were the Desert Storm matches. They were awesome.
And let's face it, bro, Slaughter was still in pretty good shape.
Yeah, at 1997, yeah.
That had a lot to do with it. If he was some, you know, fat, overweight, like, it would have been a joke. And I bet you, bro, he trained his ass off for that match as much as he could. So you got to give the guy credit, man.
So the next matchup, Jeff Jarrett getting a big push here, defeats The Undertaker by DQ in 7 minutes. Wow. The thing was here, Kane comes out, and Jeff Jarrett's like, yes. He's telling Kane, he goes, get him. So Kane turns, choke slams Jeff. The ref is watching this. So Jeff wins by DQ. So Kane says, F you, I'm not helping you out, Jeff Jarrett. I'm beating you up, but I am helping you out because Undertaker is going to lose the match. So Taker didn't want to go off with Kane. So it's interesting. He's like, wow, he just helped Jeff Jarrett win, but he also just beat up Jeff Jarrett. Yeah. So Kane played a big part in the finish and Kane walks off and Undertaker is like very confused. It's like, okay, he didn't hit me or beat me up, but he did just cost me the match.
When Kane comes down and he does that to Jeff Jarrett, he's not working with The Undertaker. So in an instance like that, bro, you've got to throw the match out. You can't punish The Undertaker because his adversary got involved in the match. I hate that bullshit to this freaking day, bro. When somebody is interfering in the match and they're clearly not doing it to help the other person,
right,
the ref needs to throw the match out. But I got to tell you, bro, there weren't many heels better than Jeff Jarrett. I'm sorry, man. You're talking about a guy not that very big, a guy with a heavy Southern accent that's hard to overcome. Bro, he just knew how to get heat, man.
Yep, no
he
doubt.
Knew how to make people hate him. Jeff Jarrett was, bro, just a tremendous, tremendous heel.
What did you think of Jeff Jarrett in the Aztec Warrior gear that when he came back, he was repackaged in? Did you like his gear?
I never, ever understood that. I'm assuming, bro, because I know his late wife, Jill, used to make all his gear. I'm assuming Jill made that. And, you know, when you look at it, bro, it really is the double J. It's the JJ. But I never really understood that look for him.
So the next thing up, Stone Cold Steve Austin, who's the Intercontinental Champion, defeats The Rock with Farooq, D'Lo Brown, Mustafa. The match goes 5 minutes and 30 seconds. He retains his Intercontinental title. He's coming off the injury, so the matches are going to be a little light on time as you're going through. But, man, he brings his pickup truck out.
I remember that.
It was awesome. Yeah. He does that thing. D'Lo kind of goes through the hood and through the front glass there at the car.
Yeah.
Rock takes the stunner on the car. Just like for a 5 minute, 30 second match, you're like, holy crap. Like, a lot happened. There's a ref bump, but it was awesome. It was like, man, like, can we get better than this? To me, I know, like, the guys who review it are saying, oh, it'll be too short or whatever, but I loved it. It was action packed for the time it wasn't. That was probably like the most excited I was for the pay per view was Austin and Rock.
Bro, that was always the challenge. How are you going to keep topping what Austin does? Because, you know, bro, the goal as a writer is you got to keep doing this. You can't start going the other way, bro. And if I'm doing that to those guys, I'm failing them. So especially with Austin, it's like, oh, man, how are we going to top this? How are we going to top this? How are we going to top this? But thank God we were able to. And, bro, you can see not long thereafter, Ed Ferrara and myself left. Austin had a lot of problems with creative, bro. And from what I understand, that was like the main reason why he left. Because, bro, when you've got somebody that strong, you better have strong material for him every week, bro, or else you're going to start bringing him down. And Austin's not the kind of guy that's going to allow that to happen.
Steve Austin's awesome. This guy's on the rise. This guy, The Rock, is now the boss of the Nation of Domination. He's on the rise. It just felt like, wow, this is above the IC title. But that's kind of just where it felt. To me, that was a big match on the pay-per-view.
Yeah, I agree with you 1,000%. And that's the thing, bro. Like, the one term I hate more than anything in wrestling, because it's such a bullshit term, bro. And the term is hot-shotting. Because as the writer of the show, you are trying to write the best show you can every single week, bro. And if it's a really good show this week, I've got the confidence in myself to make it better next week. I never in my career, bro, in any freaking company, hot-shotted a match or an angle for a rating. I always knew the next week's show was going to be better. But, bro, people would always say, you can't book Austin against The Rock and then book it again 6 months from now and it's going to mean something. Yes, you can, bro, as long as the story is there. You could book that match 10 times. As long as the story is there, people are going to care about the freaking match. But that hot-shotting bullshit, bro, I don't know if that was a Meltzer thing. I don't know who came up with that. Absolute bullshit, bro.
This was cool, though, because The Rock, like, in The Nation, beat up Austin. They steal the belt. I mean, they had a bunch of cool stuff together, and, like, you almost couldn't wait till they got into the main event scene because it's like, okay, these are the two best guys you have, bar none. So even at that point, it was obvious to me anyway.
I definitely agree.
So the next matchup is the main event of the evening. Ken Shamrock defeated Shawn Michaels, who was the world champion, with China and Triple H by DQ And obviously, Michaels retains his WWF World Heavyweight Championship. Match went 18 minutes and 30 seconds, so just barely the longest match of the night, beating Triple H and Slaughter. But the thing was here, Triple H China interfered, so Shamrock gets the win, but he doesn't get the title. Michaels retains, so he kept Shamrock strong, kept Michaels in that strong heel role. But then afterwards, Owen Hart comes out of the crowd, beats up Michaels, beats the hell out of him, and then goes back into the crowd and leaves. So the Black Heart, Owen Hart, who stiffed the hell out of Michaels, we don't know what's going on with him. Like, is he in the WWF? He's not. He just beat the shit out of Shawn Michaels for what he did to his brother. But where does that leave him? Where does he stand with WWF?
We know Owen's doing this running at the end. It's very kayfabe that Owen is in the building. We're really keeping it kayfabe. As a matter of fact, bro, I don't even know if the boys were smart into it or whatnot, but we had Owen hidden away in a room by himself.
He's the Black Heart, right? I mean, we don't know where he is, what he's doing, but he gets a title shot on Raw a few weeks later, but it's not like he's getting this big push. It's almost like he's going to feud with Triple H, and he's not going to get the big push as Undertaker is going to go after Michaels in the title and then eventually Steve Austin. So he never got like the big push out of this. He never became world champion, never got that world title push. How come the main event of this pay-per-view isn't Owen Hart versus Shawn Michaels? It seemed like that would make sense, right? Because he screwed his brother. World title match, maybe Owen doesn't need to win the title or whatever, but like it seems like that would be the logical thing, not having Shamrock be in the main event against Michaels. Was that ever a thought to put Owen in the main event?
I don't think I was ever involved in any of those discussions, but I could definitely see that being too soon. I could definitely see Owen vetoing that. And maybe, bro, at that time, because emotions were so high, bro, maybe at that time, Owen didn't want to work with Shawn. You got to let things settle, bro. And honestly, I don't think it would have been a good idea for Owen to do that at that time. I think you got to let cooler heads prevail. And that was probably a situation like that. I'm sure, bro, Vince probably suggested it. But I'm just guessing here, bro. It was something probably Owen did not want to do at that point in time. You tell me what you think, because I'm just curious, bro. I just don't think people weren't buying Owen as a babyface. I don't know, bro, if it was because he was in the role of a heel for so long. I mean, but I just really felt it was an uphill battle to get people to buy him as a babyface. What's your take on what happened during that time, John?
I don't know. I kind of wanted to see him and Michaels for the world title. Maybe he didn't need to win, but I kind of wanted him to at least get a pay-per-view title shot against Michaels and do something. Maybe they didn't see him as the top guy. I kind of did. I don't know. To me, I wanted to see him at least get the shot, like not on Raw and go on from there. Maybe he's not the tippy top guy or like the world champ, because you do have a certain pecking order. To me, Michaels is better. Obviously, Undertaker's better. Steve Austin is better. There's a certain pecking order, but he could be one of the guys that gets the shot at the title and loses.
But also, bro, I think there was more to it than meets the eye. Like, who knows, especially where Shawn's mindset was at that time. Bro, maybe Shawn didn't want to work with Owen because he didn't trust him because of what happened with Bret. There was a reason he did not have the match with Shawn Michaels. It had nothing to do with bad booking or nothing like that. There was a personal reason why that match never took place.
It's an interesting pay-per-view. I thought it was a decent show, but there's a lot of DQs. The Butterbean match is a DQ. The Outlaws match is a DQ. Obviously, the main event's a DQ. The Jeff Jarrett match is a DQ. Four out of the eight matches are DQ. So that kind of brings it down a peg to me because it's a pay-per-view. You're paying for something you want.
I definitely agree with you, bro.
Overall, thumbs up, thumbs down, in the middle.
I like it. Again, bro, we're heading towards the Attitude Era. I mean, that's the whole thing. And like I said, bro, there is no doubt in my mind now we were getting there.
At the end of 1997, what did you think of the WWF product in general? You're taking the helm writing. What did you think about the product at this point?
It definitely getting put on the right course. That's the thing that people don't understand. Bro, it takes time. Because you've got to undo all the mistakes. You got to wipe away. You got to tear down the old building. Then you got to start rebuilding brick by brick by brick. it's a process, bro. It does not happen overnight. So we were definitely on the right track.
All right. Let's head towards the plugs. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Two Man Power Trip. Check out the website, tmptempire.com. Vince, what do you got?
Russo'sBrand.com, everybody. Just go there and it'll send you the way you need to go. We got many, many shows with many, many stars. Just check it out.
And like you said, you got to check out Breaking Down the Attitude Era. Is the
guy that you guys are really enjoying the show is breaking you down.
You know, piece by piece.
I do that every 2 weeks, bro. I break down an episode of the Attitude Era, what was going on in the back, why certain decisions were made. I think you'll enjoy that, bro. Russo'sBrand.com.
All right. Thank you to Vince, and thank you everybody out there for listening. See you right back here next time for the next podcast. We'll see you next week, folks.
Are you ready?
Hey, think you can tell us what to do? You think you can tell us what to wear? You think that you're better? Well, you better get ready. Bow to the masters. Degenerate into something fool. We just got tired of doing what you told us to do. That's a brace, boy. Yeah, that's a brace, little man. Break it down. Degeneration. Think you can tell me what to do? You know who you're talking to? Well, you better get used to the way the ball bounces. I see what you got, it measures in ounces. But that's a brace, boy. Yeah, that's a brace, little man. Break it down. Degeneration. You're a big man. Treat you like you're a little man. Yeah. Break it down. Yo, tell me what it's like to be half a man. It must break your heart to see what I am. But that's a brace, boy. You can tell me what to do. You know who you're talking to. Just stop wanting me to be someone else. Put it away like a book on a shelf that you can't read, boy. Yeah, that you can't read, little man.
Today's episode of the podcast is brought to you by A Wrestling Historian. Follow A Wrestling Historian on Instagram for your latest dose of pro wrestling history. Follow A Wrestling Historian on Instagram today.